Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Here is a perspective on the enemy faced by white people today, but written in AD 109, describing Titus Caesar's cleansing of Jerusalem in AD 70. Quote, "All their other customs, which are at once perverse and disgusting, owe their strength to their very badness. The most degraded out of other races, scorning their national beliefs, brought to them their contributions and presents. This augmented the wealth of the Jews, as also did the fact that among themselves they are inflexibly honest and ever ready to show compassion, though they regard the rest of mankind with all the hatred of enemies." Close quote. That's from the Roman historian Tacitus, from his Histories, Book 5. The language may be a little stilted, but the meaning is clear. The Jews, even then, had set themselves apart as a wealthy overclass in the lands they dominated, even when under the nominal rule of Rome. They engaged in perverse and disgusting behavior, which we see today in the prominent Jewish role in pornography and promotion of perversion and the degradation and sexual slavery of white women, which we've documented on this program before. Tacitus also notices the Jews' dual code of morality, one morality for their fellow Jews and another for the rest of the world. And Tacitus sees the strength in the Jews having this dual code, though he betrays a certain naivete when he calls it simply badness. Tacitus was not alone in his observations. About four centuries earlier, the Greek historian writing under the name Hecataeus of Abdera in Thrace wrote of the Jews, quote, "Their way of living was devoted to seclusion from humankind and hatred of non-Jews," close quote. Noting the consensus of opinion about the Jews, Jewish writer Peter Schaeffer in Judeophobia, Attitudes Toward the Jews in the Ancient World, concludes, quote, "And finally, like most of his predecessors, Tacitus connects with the motif of impiety, that of misanthropia. The Jews are loyal only to their fellow countrymen, but express hostile odium toward all other people. This is reminiscent of Hecataeus, Manetho, Apollonius Molon, Diodorus Siculus, Pompeius Trogus, and above all, Lysimachus, according to whom the Jews should not show goodwill to any man and should always offer the worst possible advice." Close quote. It sounds like Lysimachus was familiar with Talmudic injunctions. I continue the quotation from Schaeffer. Quote, "Altogether, Tacitus's account of the Exodus, in adopting both the impiety and the misanthropia motifs, and in accommodating them to his own times and experience after 70 CE, is a summary not just of the Alexandrian vision, but of the mainstream Greco-Egyptian tradition starting with Hecataeus. Through him, it became common property of the Western, quote, civilization, unquote," close quote. I notice here that Jewish writer Schaeffer may be attempting mockery of Western civilization, especially considering that he very oddly places the word civilization within quotation marks. Apparently, one cannot be civilized if one has a bad opinion of Jews, even if one's name is Tacitus or Caesar. Even the Roman Emperor Claudius, who was friendly to the Jews throughout most of his career, wrote in AD 41 that their machinations, scheming, and illegal immigration to the city of Alexandria were intolerable, and that if the Jews did not stop these acts, quote, I will by all means take vengeance on them, as being the fomenters of what is a universal plague throughout the civilized world, close quote. Indeed, and that is what white people face, though too few of us are aware of it. A Jew-created universal plague. White Americans, in particular, are less aware of the Jewish plague than other nations and races. But with this radio program and the daily outreach of National Alliance members, we're working to increase that awareness. But we don't have to read modern critics of the Jews or the ancients to hear the fundamental truth about the Jewish power structure. One of Judaism's supposedly holy works, the Talmud, provides plenty of evidence by itself. In that book, Rabbi Simeon ben Yohai states without equivocation, quote, kill the best of the Gentiles, close quote. Why, I wonder, is the Talmud not attacked and execrated as a book of hate? That quotation from the Talmud, kill the best Gentiles, is not the product of a fevered Jew hater's brain. It is most emphatically not a forgery. In fact, Jewish scholars admit that the passage is there, and spend buckets of ink in trying to justify it or explain it away. They claim that the good rabbi only meant that the best of us should be killed in time of war, or that the statement was an agonized cry of a Jew persecuted by the Nazis of his day, the Romans, and that the pronouncement never had the force of law. But those are pretty weak arguments when compared with the bald fact that the call for murder is there, written by a rabbi, and has been part of their most sacred tradition for centuries, and remains standing in their holy book to this day. If you'd like to confirm what I say, just read what Jewish author Chaim Maccabee had to say in the book, Judaism on Trial, Jewish-Christian Disputations in the Middle Ages. Kill the best Gentiles. It doesn't get any more obvious than that. But who said this? Quote, I would like to go back to America when the Zionist dictatorship has been overthrown. Close quote. Was it a Muslim extremist? Or a hateful neo-Nazi? No, it was American chess genius, the late Bobby Fischer, who probably had some Jewish ancestry but rejected any connection with that tribe. In an interview he gave on an Icelandic television program, when the Zionist dictatorship has been overthrown, Mr. Fischer figured it out. And millions more are figuring it out with each passing year. Who said this? Quote, The current troubles in the world are all because of that shitty little country, Israel. Why should the world be in danger of World War III because of those people? Close quote. Was it an extreme anti-Semite ranting on the internet, venting his hate for Jews? No. It was the French ambassador to Britain, Daniel Bernard. Mr. Bernard had figured it out, and millions more are figuring it out with each passing year. Who said this? Quote, "I can't stand Jews, and everything happening to them is their own fault." Close quote. Was it the evil mullahs of Iran in a moment of candor? No. According to Jewish journalist Barbara Amiel, it was the doyen of Britain's Salon Society, later identified in the press as Lady Powell. She reportedly continued when some of her guests expressed shock at her remark. Quote, "Oh, come on, you all feel like that." Close quote. Now, Lady Powell felt it necessary to deny it was she who made these remarks, but no one denies that they were made in the circumstances mentioned. Quote, "I can't stand Jews, and everything that happens to them is their own fault." Close quote. The society hostess figured it out, and millions more are figuring it out with each passing year. The purpose of this radio program is to help you figure it out. Why are Jews disliked? In the media they own and control, they are saintly figures, intelligent, wise, noble, philanthropic, persecuted, and good-looking. In the age of the internet and instant communications, it's becoming more and more difficult for the Jews to maintain that image. In an age when Jews are at the zenith of their power, they have overplayed their hand so grossly that their hypocrisy is showing for all the world to see. The truth about the Jews is leaking out all over the place. One of the most astounding instances of Jewish hypocrisy was uttered by a Jew named Issy Liebler, who was at the time no less than the chairman of the governing board of the World Jewish Congress. Now, Issy Liebler is well known as a powerful Jew in Australia, where he was for years the official head of the Jewish community there. He now lives in Israel. In an interview with a Jerusalem newspaper, he stated about Israel, quote, "This is a country which was set up and created as a Jewish country for the Jews." Close quote. In an essay he wrote for the World Jewish Congress, he decried intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews as a kind of racial suicide, and likened assimilation with non-Jews as a slow bleeding to death of the Jewish people. He emphasized that the focus of Israeli policy should be to sharpen and intensify Jewish identity, and that even giving up territory was acceptable if it meant getting rid of non-Jews and making Israel a more nearly all-Jewish state. Liebler argues that post-Zionists threaten Israel when they publish textbooks that de-emphasize Jewish racial interests and replace them with universalist history. In the interview mentioned, Liebler went so far as to say, quote, "Multiculturalism has no place in Israel. Israel was created as a Jewish state for the Jews," close quote. That's the Jew, Issy Leibler, talking about his own people's country, talking about Israel. But what was Issy Leibler saying when he lived in Australia, a white country, a non-Jewish country? What was Issy Leibler saying when he was the head of Australia's powerful Jewish minority? Issy Leibler's advice to Israel is to protect its racial and cultural heritage. Issy Leibler's advice to Jews is to avoid intermarriage. Issy Leibler thinks it's just fine, even necessary, to separate non-Jews from Jews in Israel, to get non-Jews on the other side of a well-defended border, to throw them out of Israel. But to Australians, Issy Leibler played quite a different tune. When Australian politician Pauline Hanson was galvanizing white Australians in 1993 with her questioning of the wisdom of non-white immigration to that country, Leibler warned that extremists were threatening precious multiculturalism. He said, quote, "There is a need to sit together and establish a way in which Australians can recapture that spirit of multiculturalism, which I think we are all proud being part and parcel of, and which is really under threat." Close quote. How much clearer does it have to be before you see it? Leibler and his fellow powerful Jews want racial nationalism for their own people, because racial nationalism makes them strong and ensures their survival. They want racial nationalism because they want their kind to survive, and racial nationalism is the key to survival. They're not stupid. They want what is best for Jews. But Leibler and his fellow powerful Jews don't want racial nationalism for white people. In Australia and Europe and South Africa and the United States, wherever white people live, Leibler and his kind in Jewish organizations and in the Jewish-controlled media do everything in their power to destroy racial nationalism for white people. Everything in their power to keep us from having it. Everything in their power to make it disreputable and impossible and illegal. Leibler once said that one of the most important things in the world to him was Israel's, quote, "right to exist as a sovereign Jewish state," close quote. But Leibler and his co-racialists in the Jewish ADL and other groups devote their lives and their billions to preventing white people from claiming their right to sovereign white states. Keeping Britain British, or keeping America American, or keeping France French is anathema to them. It is the ultimate in evil, and they never let us forget that. And people of many races and of many political persuasions are beginning to see that Jewish hypocrisy. Liberals, even race-mixing liberals, are beginning to see that there's something wrong and deeply unethical about letting the intensely ethnocentric Jews be the leaders of their struggle for equality. Advocates for human rights are beginning to see that something is rotten when a group well known for imprisonment of its enemies without trial, its torture of its political opponents, and its indiscriminate bombing and machine gunning of innocent civilians is allowed to pose as champions of human rights. They simply couldn't ignore it. when the same Issy Liebler said in the Jerusalem Post that Jews should stop apologizing for lobbing missiles into Palestinian apartment buildings. Liebler's exact words were, quote, "It is therefore high time that we stopped apologizing for civilians killed because they live in proximity to leading terrorists," close quote. After all, it's not like they're anything special like Jews, is it? The Jews' hypocrisy is showing, and everyone can see it. The times they are a-changing. The times they are a-changing, partly because, as I said, the Jews have seriously overplayed their hand in the power game they are playing. And a lot of us can see that game now, and their insincerity. They're also changing because the Jews' plan for harmonious multiculturalism in the West is essentially an impossible plan, and they have inadvertently created a monster that is growing out of control of its masters. They have empowered and nurtured the nationalism of non-whites in an effort to exterminate us. But now their clients are biting the hand that fed them as they wake up and realize that the Jews would like to mongrelize and peonize and enslave them just as much as they want to do that to us. I don't usually make predictions because history has a way of taking us all by surprise. But I'll go out on a limb today because I can see certain patterns developing in the world, and I think they bode well for us and ill for the Jewish establishment, despite its fatness and its money. I think that the lines of conflict in the world are increasingly forming between the Jewish establishment on one side and almost everyone else on the other side. Yes, it is true that the Jews are a powerful presence in all white Western nations and that they can almost write the laws themselves and use their media and corrupted law enforcement to punish anyone who gets out of line. But more and more of us are getting out of line every day. And increasingly, the rebels are people within the establishment, within the government, people with a lot to lose. And the Jews can't deal with it all happening at once. If you read their own publications, they're seriously worried about the, quote, "new European anti-Semitism," close quote. Many European powers are weary of their endless wars for Israel and their open borders agenda. The Visegrad group may be just the beginning of a rebellion. Only in Britain, where they have infiltrated the highest levels of society, and in the United States, where they have the unthinking support of the fundamentalist rubes, do they still have enough control to push their desired agendas with anything approaching unanimity? And even there, they are slipping. Increasingly, the white people who are now split between left and right will come to terms, I believe, in deciding that real communitarianism, real socialism, if you will, and real private enterprise work only when there is a kinship bond, a blood bond among the people of a nation. And Jewish internationalism and transnational capitalism and the importation of cheap labor will be seen as the dirty and evil things that they are. Awareness that the Jews are an alien group with their own agenda is growing. Even a decade ago, when I saw that interview with Bobby Fischer on Icelandic television and heard him denounce the Jewish establishment in terms that might have made William Pierce blush, did the Icelandic television interviewers frown and denounce Fischer's anti-Semitism or insist that he change the subject? Did they edit the interview so that the anti-Jewish sections ended up on the cutting room floor? Not at all. The interviewers smiled and bade Fischer to continue. He spoke for half an hour. Though they did ask him to limit his use of four-letter words, they were entirely friendly and sympathetic as Fischer recounted the persecution he has received at the hands of the Jews and detailed the crimes they have committed. And similar interviews with Fischer in other countries have been much the same. Even when the stations openly feared the anti-hate laws the Jews have imposed on them. In the United States, however, Fischer was barred and censored, even wanted by the authorities. But it isn't that way everywhere, not by a long shot. We can see the new lines of conflict that are forming in the world today. The internationalist Jews, whether they call themselves capitalist or communist, are the enemies of all nations and all peoples. From our point of view, the Jews have one fortuitous flaw. They go too far. They overplay their hand. Their arrogance and their egotism and their chutzpah often combine to make them blunder. And when they blunder, their sanctimonious moralizing is revealed for the phony and ugly thing that it really is. The Jews aren't holding five diamonds. They're holding four diamonds and the deuce of clubs. They're four flushers, and they know it. And increasingly, the rest of us know it too. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. The National Alliance is working to educate white men and women around the world as to the nature of the reality we must face, and organizing our people to ensure our survival and advancement. We need your help to continue. Please send the largest contribution you can afford to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. You can also help us by visiting natall.com/donate. That's natall.com/donate. Make your life count. Once again, our postal address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies.